I have hit record.
Hello.
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 So we've hit season two.
Yay!
I do want to do a thing before we start. I was going to do it at the end of the last one, but my migraine hit me very hard. When watching things, I don't think everybody does this, but I'm like, oh, that's, I'm like this person, and like Chris is like this person, and Hamish is like this one. So I've got, the question is, like, who are we most like? I think Chris is, I've made notes as well. Chris,
okay.
I think Chris is the Holden.
Oh.
Okay.
Like, he is very morally driven and like unwilling to compromise the morality to pragmatism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Chris, but also, as a bit of a wobble now and then. We've seen the edges of that with Holden.
Mm-hmm.
Hamish, I struggled, but I think, and when I realized, I was like, yeah, this is dead on. Fred Johnson.
Yeah, no, I see that.
Quite like an imposing, you know, manly in a way.
Yeah,
very like strong, intelligent, like very controlled on the surface. But underneath that, fucking roiling emotions. Like, it's all a cover for roiling emotions.
I didn't think I was that controlled on the surface, to be honest.
No, you come across as very controlled on the surface.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. Well, there you go.
Me, again, I struggle. I think Miller, I think impulsive, naive, like very id, and like a romantic.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'd put. I totally agree with the Fred Johnson with you, Drew.
Well, yeah, I mean,
But with the Fred, yeah, but I don't know. Maybe like I can see Miller resemblance. I could also see Alex resemblance.
Oh, Alex is Millie's favorite.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to come back from when you've already been assigned one. You know.
Yeah.
Sorry, I need to, doesn't Fred, no, the does thing, Fred have a moustache just? Or has he not got, no, he's not got facial hair, has he?
No, I think the thing about Fred Johnson is that his, like, guiding principle is his strong, like, well, his strong principles, but, yeah, like, in the same way that Hamish is, like, dogmatically against the corporate shit. Fred, you know, like, in the same way that Fred Johnson is, like...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Sworn OPA, like,
yeah,
loyal,
yeah,
to the cause.
Principled, but the principles are married to pragmatism, which is, I think, where it's different from Holden, where it's that the principles come before the pragmatism.
Mm. I'd have liked the Holden-ish area, but I think you might have a point about maybe an older age of more Fred Johnson.
One of those things where there's a bit of all of us in, or you know,
yeah,
characters work on TV shows, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the techie stuff, I can also see Naomi as Hamish a bit, but Naomi's a bit too, can't think of the word,
emotional,
diplomatic,
disengaged.
Maybe not emotional. She's
out of all that difficult stuff and she just wants to, you know, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I can see you being an Iommi, to be honest, Drew, because you're often the peacemaker or the person.
That's true, but in the past, I try to tone this down now, but always in the past, if things are very calm and peaceful, I'll stir things up. And then on the opposite, when people are at each other's throats, I'm like, oh, I don't like this, and I'll try and make peace. So I'm a bit like...
Okay.
You're just a contrarian.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we're in series two.
So Bobby, you talk about Bobby a lot, and we get introduced to Bobby.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I was just saying before we started, I was just saying to Drew that I think we learn an awful lot about the Mars and the Martian people in this episode.
Oh, the Martian, the MMC, right?
No, no, I mean, generally, I think we learn a lot about Mars.
It's through the lens of the MMC.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the
because Martian, it's through their lens, yeah. Also from what Eva Sarala and the other people at the big meeting speak about, you know, I think it's almost everything in it is about Mars, apart from the stuff that's on the Rossi.
We do see the UN Secretary General for, I think, the first time.
Yeah, I think it's the first time.
Oh, I wrote this, yeah. Is he like CEO of Earth or president of Earth or
Well, he's the Secretary General, you know.
Secretary General.
So, you should know. It's your law, you know.
Well, the subtitles refer to him as Man.
Oh, well. So, that seems to be accurate.
As far as we know, that's accurate. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think probably we shouldn't have talked about Bobby quite so much before. I think
kind of because
we should have let this series play out a wee bit first.
First impressions are not great. I'm just going to say that.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, watching this in isolation, we've talked. Yeah, we've kind of thought. Yeah, I can see.
Bobby comes into her character. She at the start. She's you go on a journey with Bobby. Yeah.
I get Ashley Williams energy a little bit from. Who's that? Mass Effect, the racist lady.
I absolutely see why at this point, but I mean, I didn't see much of her character because I killed her as soon as I could. But
she strikes me as a conservative overachiever, which are two things I really don't like.
Well, I think what mollifies that, because I agree, when she's doing the MMC chant, MMC, we're going to ground our mountain, which I kind of love. I love that kind of rousing, you know. But so we see that. We see the other end of that, that towards the end when she's talking to a commanding officer or whatever, and she's like, we should, you know, war, and he obviously is disappointed in her and walks away. When she looks at terraformed, but she just wants a beautiful Mars. Like she looks at she looks at that terraformed Mars like somebody in love, you know. She's like,
yeah, and we also learn, and this is probably why she's so. This is why she has the room to grow as a character, really, is that she also says that we've got set back 50 years then, or another 50 years on terraforming because of some, you know, some sort of skirmish with Earth.
And she's very much, she's a doer. Like, she's not
she doesn't like sitting around. Thing, like,
she wants to do something to solve problems. Like, can't Amos has that as well, you know.
I kind of feel like
Amos has you know warmed up a little bit over the season, so I'm expecting the same thing with Bobby, right?
Talk about Amos warming up because we've been through that whole arc. So what you're seeing?
What you think about Amos? Now,
we had a good Amos scene in this episode.
We had a good Amos scene with him and Miller.
Two good Amos scenes actually. Mm. Well, one Amos scene and one group scene with Amos being important.
Well, is this Amos taking out the safe? He opens the safe.
Oh, well, that's more of a story one. We were thinking about character stuff.
Oh, character stuff. Yeah. So him and Miller,
Miller, and then the dinner scene.
What I love about him and Miller squaring up is again this feels very me. So Miller does the old "I'll drop the cup and distract you and then sucker punch you" trick. And like it's like punching a fucking wall. And then Amos just fucking flops.
Hits him back and he's just flying across the room. Yeah.
But Miller's got a bit of the quixotic whatever to him as well, because like Amos is probably like twice his fucking weight. I mean, in muscle.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, no, this dude hurt my friend, killed my friend. I'm gonna have a fight. I mean, Amos just wants Miller wants catharsis there. I don't think necessarily.
Yeah. That's what he wants.
Well, yeah, because presumably him being a belter and Amos being an earther, like there's never a chance that Miller could ever do anything.
Physically, they're not going to be.
I mean, maybe a very weak earther versus a very, you know, stacked belter, maybe. Mm. But yeah, no.
I mean,
interesting you say about the that he wants. Miller often gets himself beaten up
That's a classic. If you're going through something emotional, you want to feel something physical, so you feel like it's what you're feeling is real.
Exactly,
you know, that's where self harm.
It's inducing somebody else to harm you instead of direct self harm.
And it also gives you control. It gives you control over your pain. You are,
But also, I think there seemed to be a part of him where he almost felt like he had to do it. It's almost like he owed it to his friend.
There's a lot to it. It's not just it's not straightforward. And also, Amos was waiting for it, but Amos is not the one to wait around.
Well, there's a scene before that where I had a lot of notes this episode. Right at the beginning, Miller says in reference to Amos, nobody asked you, no neck. And I think Amos is a little bit taken aback at that. He's like, oh, I didn't realize there was aggro between us.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. He thought it was sort of, yeah, he does kind of look at him. And
yeah.
And I was like,
And Amos is like, I could fucking break you in half, mate. What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, that's a thing. It's something you learn in martial arts, actually. I don't know if you ever had this, but there's a thing is you can afford to be, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but you can afford to be generous and
forgiving.
Generous, or... courteous. There's something else I'm missing here. There's a word or a phrase that gets it. The connotation of this other word is better, but I mean to weaker men, basically, because you know you can protect yourself. You know they're weaker men than you. That's the sort of basic thing of it. You know, the martial arts is about being able to fight but not have to, sort of thing.
Yeah,
if that makes some sort of sense. And I think despite Amos's readiness with violence, I don't think it's always his first resort, but it is his it's the thing he knows how to do if he has to do something. As he feels like he has to do something, and he goes there's something more interesting stuff to go on, but carry on.
I would say the puzzle of what drives Amos, like Chris at this point has all the pieces, but they've not really been made explicit. Yeah. So we're almost there.
Well, Naomi does a good little bit of a speech about it as well.
Is he, I'm just going to say it, is he like special needs?
It depends what you mean by that.
Yeah.
Like, so that's a bit of a broad
category, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I can't be much more specific, but does he have behavioural problems?
Well, yeah, he's got behavior problems. Yeah. But I mean, he's quite clever. I mean, he is an engineer. He's not as smart as Naomi. He's not as good as Naomi, but he is.
When I say special, I'm not talking about
educational
level.
Needs. Then
I'm using it as the umbrella term because I'm not entirely sure what I'm getting at. Like, but it's like
what you're trying to do here is say no offense to anybody in the audience, but we're going to label them. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't want to like slap it. Like,
well,
I mean,
I think Naomi puts it pretty much the best, you know.
Mm. Or even Miller when he says, "Is he like your child?" Like,
there is. She says, "He's not your sweetheart. It's like your kid or something."
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, when I was at university, I shared a house with a guy who was like, he was built like a brick shit house, as they say, but he had autism. And so we got on really well. And I, over the course of the time in university, ended up helping him with a lot of his social cues. And we had like quite a good like friendship because. Like,
oh, you mentioned this before,
Where it's like
you'd feel safe when you were out because nobody would pick on him. Yeah.
Like, I could get absolutely blotto in the worst end of town, and no one was going to touch me because you know. But at the same time, it's like I helped him with social cues, so we felt perfectly fine going out and about as well. So we had this kind of like Timon and Pumbaa style relationship, which worked out. Nicely. And is that
you lost me there?
It's Timon
and Pumbaa, The Lion King.
I've not seen it either, but
I've
absorbed enough by
you don't
osmosis.
Have to show me. You're all right.
It's okay. Are you sure? I could show the audience. I haven't got a background yet, so.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, like in terms of like they have like a codependent relationship or a
symbiotic?
Symbiotic relationship kind of thing where they sort of help each other because Naomi. probably isn't as good a fighter as Amos, right? Like
no,
Amos.
No.
Amos is.
I'm sure I can handle herself, but yeah, I mean Amos.
Yeah. Very different.
Yeah, so
Amos is a bit of a powerhouse.
I like in the scene with the fight with Miller, like we see Amos's crazy eyes.
Yep, that was exactly what I was going to say. He went past the point.
He switches.
Switch when he was on the table. I think if Naomi didn't stop him, Miller would be
dead. Oh, he would kill him. Yeah.
Okay,
because
so
Miller
he
wouldn't stay back, wouldn't give up.
Yeah,
and then
but Amos doesn't want to beat Miller. He's like stay down, Miller, and he means it. Like,
he means it. Yeah,
like,
yeah. He's not being rude. It's not bravado or anything. It really is. Just look, let's just call this quits. You're not going to beat me, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like
animations. Almost, cartoons.
Like I really want to say just because it's very simple to state. I think I really want to say what's going on with Amos. I'm holding myself back because. I think it is revealed explicitly, like in a few episodes. So I'll yeah.
Save it for the.
But he doesn't. Does he just not get social cues? Is that what I'm kind of like? Or is there more?
Broadly, yeah, but it is more specific.
It's more pragmatic than that, I think. Even like as seen with Miller, it's more cut and dried, and he's like, yeah, Miller, you can't beat me. Just please stop. You know, it's not that he doesn't want to hurt Miller. He spells it out, really. I mean, he does. He spells it out. He says, "Yeah, I mean, he seemed like a good guy, but he crossed the line. He pointed a gun at Naomi, and he might as well put the gun to his own head." I mean, he said it, you know, and that's exactly. Even as an audience of people watching this series for the first time, I think 90% of people watching that show on that episode would have known that as soon as he pointed the gun at Naomi in front of Amos. Mm-hmm. Amos was going to kill him.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of I think certainly in today's real world, right? Like the rule of guns, like the rule number one of guns is don't point a gun at anything you don't intend to shoot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a guns person, but I've heard that a lot. Yeah. So if you put a gun to someone, that's kind of like you have to then assume that they're just about to get shot, right? And I think anyone would agree that, like,
Amos was protecting Naomi. That was,
and I think Miller knew that as well.
But it wasn't just protecting Naomi, though. That's the interesting point. It was also Naomi's decision had been made, and Amos had no reason to. Now it's interesting. I'm not going to say he agreed with her. I'm going to say he had no reason to disagree with her, which I think is much more important for Amos.
Yeah.
He's not stupid. He doesn't not have his own thoughts. But if he doesn't have a reason to go against her, her word is, you know, the word of God, basically. Law.
And so at the beginning, you were saying similar things about Amos as you are now about Bobby. Like, he's just, you know, and I agreed on my first watch. Like, he's just, you know, he's a jockish, kind of violent. Have you warmed to Amos?
Yes.
You haven't? Yeah.
Yeah, once you know him better. It's like Drew, you know. He's so scary, but once you get to know him, he's lovely.
I'm still waiting for the warming to happen.
But the so that little moment where he's basically switched and he's got Miller on the table, and I mean, Naomi comes in and she's actually like pulling at his arm and everything. She's not, you know, completely ineffectually, because, you know, it's Amos.
Well, she's trying to get through. It's another moment where we see the switch go the opposite way. She's trying to get through.
She's trying to get. So she says his name, and he doesn't kind of go. He goes.
It's like he wakes up.
Yeah.
He wakes up and he realizes she's there. He realizes what he's doing.
As soon as she says stop it, you know, and he realizes that he's.
This isn't like hypnotism gone wrong or something. He got hypnotized at a carnival once. And
you know how the Mormons have these comedy nights? They had a hypnotist one night. That was what it was.
Yeah.
Amos thinks he's a chicken.
Yeah, I was going to say, he quacks like a duck whenever you say a certain word. You know?
But no, I mean, that, the hypnotism thing in a way is not a million miles away, but not, it's not
is
bad.
Is it a trauma or something to that effect?
Yeah.
You know, well, he's mentioned some stuff of his own, you know. Yeah.
The only reason I didn't immediately jump to trauma was because it's been done a lot before.
It's not, it's a very specific kind of.
And also it's, I mean, to say it's been done is fair, but that does make a lot of people who they are.
I mean, it's been done because it's common, you know, like it's just that, like, I'm always trying to think a few extra steps ahead.
We love it when you've got your theories and stuff. I'm like, yes.
Oh, I've got a thing about the very opening scene. I think the opening, it's not quite the opening scene, but on the Ross, Holden's having a dream where they're infected, right? And he wakes up from that dream. Okay, so that's Holden's dream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in that dream...
A nightmare.
Holden is dreaming that Naomi is saying to him, "You're basically a superhero. You should have superpowers." So Holden's having a very like self-congratulatory dream. I know that's it's for the audience. It's not really, but yeah, it amused me that in his dream he's like, "I'm a superhero. I'm the best one."
Doesn't seem like he'd have that level of confidence underneath, really.
Is there anything to be found in the dream? Does it mean anything?
No, I think it's just obvious. I think it's just
it shows you, and if you, obviously, you know, this is the second episode of Space Sex. It shows you that he cares for Naomi in a in a more than just captain-y kind of way, I think. I think it's setting that groundwork.
And also, I guess this is a little bit obvious, but he's obviously concerned about what the danger of the proto molecule.
I mean, once you've seen what happens, you're going to be terrified, aren't you?
And they've got
Can we talk about the proto molecule?
Of course we can.
Because I feel
That's great. That's
that's the big thing about this episode. So I feel like we're burying the lead a little bit because so they opened up the safe. And then they discovered the notes, the research notes from Dresden. And basically, we are told that this is an extraterrestrial / extrasolar substance.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to learn more about it. Now, I don't know whether or not this is true, because I'm kind of surprised it's aliens, right? Because I called it quite early on.
You did, yeah.
I don't know. This one is, I'm on the fence about whether or not this is actually aliens.
I'd say that it's a lot more complex than we think, but you're kind of getting most of the pieces now anyway, because that was what Series 1 was about. Series 1 was about, you know, teasing it very slightly and then going, oh my God, this is what it is. Or not this is what it is, this is how it affects things, was the sort of big finale of the series.
I mean, what we know for a fact is now it is of alien origin in the sense that it's from outside our solar system. That's what we know for a fact.
Yeah. Do we know that, or is that?
They found it on Phoebe, and they knew that from examination. They found it. They didn't make it. It wasn't.
They're not misdirecting us with that.
Yeah, there's no misdirection. It is extrasolar.
It is aliens.
So it's come from. But they're given all the sort of theories that we might give as an audience. They're like, well, was this an accident? Is this the way they travel? This thing is it not? Is it a life form of its own? Does it travel that way? Is it a bioweapon somebody sent? Is it a bioweapon that just got lost?
Is it a message?
Is it a message? Yeah, there's all sorts of things. Yeah.
Is it their version of the Voyager probe? You know.
Yeah, because obviously we see that it changes, and it changes other things around it.
Mm. Well, it's very information powerful, density you know. Was something that Dresden mentioned in there, they want to basically, so it responds to, it seems to respond to information.
Yeah.
Well, remember the very final scene of the series one.
Adam Jensen zipped up. You know?
Kenzo gets sort of what's the word? Imitated at first.
Oh, cloned. No.
Just before that, the sort of the
hologrammed, I think.
Hologram looking thing. The little motes of stuff sort of coalesce to look like him a bit, and then he gets sucked into the, you know, the.
So
they're
taking his information, the biomass, like his brain, and presumably
we don't know that.
We don't know anything.
We don't know that.
Yeah, but, we don't know any more at this point about that part of it. All our information that's known to be true, I suppose, comes from the stuff that Dresden does.
Okay, so Dresden is obviously, not obviously, Dresden seems to be genuinely, keen to work this out at the cost of any human lives. But
Hundreds of thousands of them.
But I mean,
it's imitating reality in a way at the moment, and that there's people in like Gaza, it's not politicizing this, I'm just pointing out the sort of a parallel, is that there's literally tens if not hundreds of thousands of people dying there, and the rest of the world is not really there's a detachment.
Yeah.
Even from people that care about it, there's a detachment because it's powerlessness, or there is a sort of political will not to do anything.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it's like with this. It's like the news.
Expanse is a smarter show in that regard than a lot would be, in that it shows that, life just goes on. Life everywhere, maybe it's heard about it, but, what the fuck can we do? And it's complex. Do we really have the full,
But also, with Eros in particular, I think they even mentioned it at the last episode, where it's like Eros, used to be the jewel of the belt, but now it's basically considered
gambling and sex, cheap gambling and cheap sex.
Yeah, like the rough end of town, as it were. So even if, they did do something horrible to it, which obviously they are, and people found out about it, they'd be like, "Oh, well, they're probably all just criminals." Or
they've dehumanized the people there first of all.
I meant to bring it up in the last episode. But, I mean, this is stuff that has happened in you know, America did the Tunguski experiments, where they. Mm-hmm. They took a bunch of homeless people, I think, and they were, you know, 99% black people, and they intentionally infected them with syphilis to just see what syphilis does to the body long term. This is the American government and this isn't like conspiracy. This is the documents, you know, it's known, and that was in the 50s, 60s, I think.
Yeah, not ancient history for sure.
Yeah, so that's you know, this isn't, you know, out there as an idea. You know, I think as people on the left, we tend, you know, we're defensive of science versus the right, who want to, you know, deny science and stuff. But I think unrestrained science, you know, like Dr. Mengele under the like unrestrained science, and I would say the Manhattan Project. I think the Manhattan Project. Yeah. Those people should be vilified as fucking enemies of humanity, regardless of their intentions. That, you know, anyway.
Most of them felt like they were. It appears.
Well, they still fucking did it, didn't they?
It's that balance. Yeah, I mean, there's a big discussion to be had there, but yeah,
there's a discussion there, but it's for a later episode.
So what else we've got about Amos and Miller then?
Miller says, and he says to Naomi when she comes in after the fight, antennas busted, which. Mm. Now, is that a threat? Is that a callback to Adam Jensen when he was trying to communicate out?
I don't think
I just
think he means he's not receiving just what you said earlier. He's not getting all the cues and signals.
Yeah,
it's just a human reactions thing. He doesn't think he's augmented or anything. And please call him Kenzo, because the more you're going about Adam Jensen, the more confused I'm getting. I know the actor has played the guy, but you know, imagine people watching this and thinking, "Oh, I'll jump in at the series 2 start thing." You know, this guy's disappeared. But
honestly, I think most people who are watching this who have watched The Expanse, I think the overwhelming majority will have played the newer Deus Ex games, and probably
maybe.
In my head, he's playing the character he plays in the fucking games, you know, give or take. He's Adam Jensen. Another, the new spy that we meet this episode, his name in my head, because I know we know his name, but his name is Spy.
Spy.
Yeah.
Do you mean Avicerella's?
Yeah. And he's another cool looking. He's another like very attractive man. Like, there's a lot of like attractive men in this show.
Oh yeah, it's her bodyguard type guy. You mean?
Yeah, the new one.
I wasn't sure if he was when he was introduced, because I remember us talking about it last time. I thought, oh no, we haven't met him yet. He's also like a really close advisor stroke, as you say, spy. Mm.
Send the husband away to Luna and bring this guy on board. I can see what's happening.
I love the. It's really nice in that, like, her husband is clearly, this is last episode, but he's not as smart as her, he's not as able as her, he's not as brave as her, like, you know, in a traditional gender role sense, they're flipped. But there's no friction. Actually, they introduce friction later and that bothers me, but at this point there's no friction there. He's just like, yes, you are the, you know, you're the one who can take, I'm going to take care of the kids and I'm going to go to Mars and I'll to Luna. And I like that it's just presented without any friction. There's been progress, like he's not insecure in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, though, like, you're going to want to do what's best for your family.
But this written 20 years ago would have been, but I'm the man, I should be protecting the family, you're the woman, you should be the nurturer.
Well, it was written nearly 20 years ago, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah.
10 or 15, maybe, I don't know.
The antennas busted also, of course, in the second episode of season 1. You know, when they're fixing the antenna on the top.
Oh, right.
On the night when they can't communicate.
That's the one. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I mean maybe you're right, but I think you're seeing too much symbolism in certain
things. Little echoes.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it is a smart enough show that maybe. Yeah, maybe I'm just not picking up on this. Maybe my antenna's busted. Oh, I think it is.
Does he mean? Is he referring to the fact that he just sent his head for a spin?
No, I think he's just talking about Amos's inability to or black and whiteness or what. I think you're reading too much into that. Personally.
Yeah, I don't think that necessarily. I think they're using metaphors that are of their world.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You
walk on a spaceship, have a bus.
Hang on a minute.
See you one.
Is there actually an antenna that's busted, or is Does someone no, need to fix no. the antenna? Okay.
No. He's not augmented or anything, and nobody thinks he is. That's not. Yeah. Yeah. No.
I think is Chris getting at under the control of somebody else, like literally.
Oh, I see. Right. No.
No. Okay. No. I mean, does the ship have an antenna that needs to be repaired?
No.
Okay.
No, its antenna is intact.
That is not a metaphor. We are literally talking about. Miller says. The antenna's busted.
Yeah, but I think he's talking about Amos's.
Talking about Amos just being a bit.
Okay.
Not attuned right, to good. Other people.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
There's
something else important, kind of important in this conversation, because obviously it's Naomi he's talking to, and when Naomi because Naomi thinks Julie is his girlfriend at this point.
Yeah.
Which is
about
how long you've been together, and Miller goes, "I've never met her." And I think partly because of her relationship with Amos and just partly because of who she is, she doesn't quite like... She gets it. She understands like how you could have somebody in your life that is like that against rationality, maybe.
Possibly. I mean, could there be more like... Could it be like more of a Star Helix thing? Could it be that because she's such a high-profile person, there could be any... It could be a bounty hunter or...
I don't know what you're saying.
I don't know what you're saying either.
Aren't there like a litany of reasons why he would be interested in Julie Mao outside?
No, that he's interested. That she
he obviously cares. His
guiding star, and he's in love with her. Like she can see that he's in love with her, and that you know, given that they've never met, and he's just somebody he's supposed to be tracking down. That's odd. But Naomi's like, yeah, fair enough. Tell me about that.
She's okay,
very easily.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, it's good that you keep digging deeper into things, but sometimes I think you go down a rabbit hole that it's just rabbits.
I mean, looking into things that are off the cuff comments, Miller talks about this coffee machine that Holden keeps going on about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get the impression from that they're sitting getting treatment together a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And he bangs on about it. Because Miller does bang on about coffee all through the show, really.
Yeah.
Holden does bang on about the coffee. He does seem to have it. It seems to be his... it's definitely his drug of choice, and it's... You know,
I like that they don't overdo it. It's only... Like,
yeah, we don't see it a lot, but we know that it's important from scenes that we have seen and the thing about the match heads and all that.
Like he grew up on Earth, so presumably he had much easier access to coffee than anybody. Mars and then the belt in particular probably rarely get coffee, real coffee. So he's it's just his drink, right?
Although he has it on the.
But he has to put a match head in it to make it taste not like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's I'm not that familiar with shit coffee, I'm sorry to say.
Well, I mean, it's tea for us, right? If we were in a place where you couldn't you couldn't get a proper cup of tea, and it was like, well, we've got these leaves that kind of taste like tea, and if you put this in, like in the war, when we couldn't get World War II, when we couldn't get coffee here, and people started drinking chicory, which is some root that's roasted and ground up and kind of tastes like coffee. And yeah, it's a similar, you know. Yeah, that way if you could have a proper cup of coffee or a proper cup of tea in our case, we'd be like, oh God, that's amazing. You know?
It's like, yeah, but then there's you drinking your Red Label shit.
It's still real tea. It's the bottom end of real tea, but it's real tea.
Yes.
It's the right plant.
Yeah. I mean, you can get, like, do you just get it because it's the cheapest?
Yeah.
Because you can get, like, there's often a brand that's on special offer where you can...
I don't have a refined enough palate to notice the difference, honestly. With most foods, like cheap food and expensive food, I'm like, basically the same.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so things like baked beans, people go about Heinz baked beans or whatever. Mm. Really, it's they might have...
Oh, you're talking to a baked bean connoisseur here.
Oh, well, you know, but you're eating a lot more corn flour than you think you are then.
Well, I will say
it's that thicker Branston sauce beans, and stuff, you know.
Yeah, but I Branston is, I think, the top tier of
I tend to agree there.
Straight out of the can, without any other things happening, I'll give you Branston, yeah.
With beans, there's
HP are quite good as well for beans.
Salty to sweet spectrum, and I prefer the saltier end of beans to the sweeter end of beans.
That's where Branston is. I mean, you can do a lot.
I like the ones that go a bit pulpy when you cook them, which Heinz don't do. The cheaper ones are good. They go a little bit pulpy, and I like that.
Anyway, beans.
You can do a lot with baked beans. You know, you know, pimp them up a little bit. You can get
magic beans. I call it. Well, my friend calls it that. Anyway,
now. A can of beans, a can of chili, and some cheese, and you got a fucking meal. You got a stew.
So, right, so let's round off the Miller and Amos and the rest of the crew thing then, and go to jump to the end of the show, and it's where they have. Now, have you seen Firefly?
Yes.
Have you seen Firefly, Drew?
Yeah.
Right. There's a big scene in that where they all sit down for a meal, all the new people plus the crew, and they all have a big meal. And that's like a really, and the actors talked about that becoming a really good episode for them as well, because that was when all the cast sort of joined, and when the cast all sort of bonded. And
I think that's a Western thing. I think that comes from Western.
Definitely, and I think
Firefly has Western influences. This has Western influence. It's the, you know, the new workers on the ranch, and like the old hands, and you know, the cowboy, and they all come together at the dining table .
And I think that the show, they didn't have to do it, including Miller, I mean.
Mm.
You know, he could have just sort of done his thing and walked away, and it wouldn't really have...
He was kind of thinking, you can tell, and it's been great acting, he's not sure he's welcome.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
He's probing.
And it takes the only person... Well, if Naomi or Holden... or Alex had said to him to sit down, I think he would. He might have done it, but it would still be completely. Still be on that. Was it right? Is it not? It needed Amos to invite him to the table for it to work, and I think that's why the rest of them didn't say anything.
When Amos moved the pincer spanner thing, whatever, that's another one that makes me cry every single fucking time, because it's again, it's so much, and it's not exposition, it's not dialogue, it's just. Moves the thing out of the way, and he said, "I'm wobbling." So,
yeah, but it is. That's Amos's emotional side. That's the like, yeah, okay. So yeah, and of course we've got the other aspects of it, because Alex has made this lasagna.
doesn't look great, but also
it's made out of thing... whatever they can find, basically.
Yeah, but it's like he served it cold.
No. I think it's like microwave.
There's no steam coming off it. It's cold. I guarantee you that's cold.
Yeah, maybe it was in the thing, but yeah.
It's hot enough.
Remember temperature, pressure, ship's atmosphere. There's various reasons.
Oh, shit. Damn.
There's various ways for that to play out. So don't get too scientific on us.
That touches on something that annoys me. And I don't understand why it's the norm in making TV and films. When they drink from empty cups. And you can just tell it's an empty.
Oh yeah.
In this series, just put some fucking. Why don't you put some fucking water? I mean, I get it. It's a little bit more.
They might have to reset things. And
they should have a year at acting school where they teach them how to drink from an empty cup and make it not look like a fucking empty cup.
So I want to get this.
Around like this.
Yeah. Mm. I want to get through this. Sorry, before my brain goes off, and I don't want anybody else to mention things out of order for this. But this seems important in order. So where was it? So the lasagna thing, and then, so the first thing that happens is Alex takes it out of the space microwave. And it's all, see, now he's got me, see, Chris has got me thinking about it and trying to explain it now, but he has got it all, it's all screwed down and pressurized and everything, Chris. Mm-hmm. You not notice that? This...
So what is the gravity situation on this ship right now? Because things look like they're sticking to the table.
They must be on the, they must be accelerating.
Yeah, they're moving. They're heading back to Tycho at the moment. So they're accelerating, which means they've got some gravity. But you hear the gravity boots clicking on the deck and stuff. Mm. So anyway, yeah.
The reason there's no steam is because it's a TV show and they're not going to serve hot food. They could have posted some steam on, but I honestly, I've watched that scene probably 15 times and I've never noticed that there's no steam. So that's kind of interesting that you pick up on
that. But also, from my point of view, I noticed that it was all... pressurize and everything as well. So
I like that it's in kind of an S shape as well, so it, you know, it cooks quicker or whatever, I guess.
Anywho, before I get, I'm not gonna,
but
get
it's easier to cut up.
Anyway, it seems to be making six portions. Yeah, right, moving on. Ah, my brain's gonna lose everything, it's all leaking out my brains into my earphones. So the next thing that happens is that, so Alex takes the food out, and then he goes, and then Holden and Naomi come in, and it's like, oh, what's, you know, what is it, why do you want us here or something? So he's obviously called everybody to the mess, or the galley rather, and Holden actually goes to walk away quite noticeably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Naomi is kind of like halfway, sort of.
Holden's like, this is nonsense. What is this, Alex? What are you doing? Yeah.
So it's interesting that what the reactions are, even though they're actually quite friendly with Alex already, those two.
Amos's reaction is food. I'll take some.
Yeah, he walks in, sees food. He takes Naomi's plate off her, basically. Naomi's just going to the bother of, you know, like, getting a bit on a plate, and he goes, oh, great, thanks. So Amos is simple, as you say. It's a straightforward, not in an idiot way. I mean, you know, he's like, there's some food. Yeah, I mean, he's a bit cheeky taking it off Naomi, but that might be a bit of a joke between them as well. You never know. I think it's a friendly thingy. Yeah, and bums. Oh. Sorry, I just hit the button for stop record. I really need to. I wish there was a way to just wipe every keyboard shortcut and start from there, you know. So I don't know quite when I touched that. It was very recent. Amos comes in, and then Miller comes along, and we get that thing that we talked about. We just mentioned about the Amos and him thing and him coming in. So but then, then we get the cheese story. And
I think I mentioned, Chris was asking about food, and I said, they've got real cheese. They talk about it later, and that's...
So they talk about it, and it also gives them an extra bonding, because they would travel to the greater belt, you know, the asteroid belt itself, back to Ceres. So they're basically Ceres residents, more or less. That's where they put their head down when they weren't in space. So they knew about all this, and it had all happened. And of course, we then find out from the other side about Miller was the one that arrested the people, and then the evidence went missing, and, you know, and all that. And so it becomes, the whole thing becomes much more of a bonding thing between Miller and Naomi and Amos and the crew.
There's a good scene. Licked by cheese.
Yep.
And about cheese. Yeah, we can all bond over cheese.
Cheese, yeah. Why not?
One thing I did notice about this scene is that the table is actually... I love the design of the table, because...
I knew you would pick up on that.
Because Miller can just join the... Like, with a table when it's rectangle... I've got nothing against rectangle tables, by the way. Perfectly fine shape for a table. But when you sit at the end of a table... Right, it can be quite cramped, because there are people sit like around it. You know, if you're sitting around a table, the corner is quite a dense area of, you know, it's always a bit
legs
awkward.
And elbows.
Yeah.
And...
So that you can even in a pinch have two people sitting either on the flat side or one person sitting at the point, it still is better than if it was a right angle type of table. It's just, yeah, it's just a good, it's just a much more.
That's not what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to talk about the fact that there's plants growing inside it.
I didn't know there were. Oh, and okay, yeah.
Even in the table.
It's the same table that Miller gets smashed onto, isn't it?
Yeah, but I didn't. There's plants in the wall on a I swear when we rotational see thing.
Yeah, so. There's some green there.
Yeah.
And they talk about that in a future episode because Alex is this. Alex, I think, is the one that starts looking after it or whatever. Chris is doing his background magic.
There's some plants in the wall.
Yeah. I don't remember putting them on the table. It is a lit up table though, up from underneath.
Yeah.
Okay, I see it. Right, I'm going to just do it.
I assume possibly for food, but also mainly like oxygen scrubbers, right?
Yeah, I think it's a combination thing. Yeah. He's going to bring it up. Also worth. This is me. Chris's influence, not bad influence. Chris's influence here, and this is what I thought. One of the things was you were going to say about this. The table is still cracked because they don't bother to fix it.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of Miller's communicator.
And Adam Jensen's helmet.
Oh yeah. So there we go. There's the green beneath it.
Oh yeah.
You don't usually see it, but
It's around the edges, isn't it? Same as it is in that thing on the wall. But yeah, the cracks. You know, the cracked table. Because Holden does sort of look at it a little bit and then goes, you know, what's happened here? Okay, I don't really know.
We'll fix that when we get back.
I've just had some hot love and I don't care.
SpaceX.
I suppose we should get onto that as well, actually.
The SpaceX.
Well, not specifically that scene, but the fact that that's where it's Holden and Naomi are right now. I suppose we've said it, actually, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting that they put the helmets together for a private conversation.
Oh, I love that scene.
Divers do that, though, you know? And astronauts, it is a thing. I think we mentioned it.
I love that scene, though, because that's Naomi's kind of family-oriented side. Like, you know, she just wants to check that Holden's okay after what he's been through. And that, again, that's another one that brings a bit of a tear to my eye, or more than a bit of a tear.
Do you think the helmets are designed for that? Because presumably in an emergency situation where all communications go out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the thing. That's the thing for divers and astronauts.
They don't have to be designed. If they're touching, the vibrations will.
If you're inside a pressurized atmospheric area, you know, bubble, like a space suit or a diving, you know, a deep sea diving suit or whatever. Yeah, that's just a property of it.
Mm.
So, and as I say, it's a real thing. It's something they do in diving, and astronauts do it as well.
Yeah.
It's a known emergency communication thing.
Also, like, we get a bit more of Holden's, as Naomi keeps picking up on Holden's, like, chit-chat when he's under stress.
Yeah.
Like, it's a fun trait. It doesn't really mean it's just a fun trait that I enjoy.
So that's kind of neat. They're
also both rather fit, aren't they? Bastards. Yeah. Holden's like, oh, muscles. Yeah. She's all like smooth.
I got to be honest, I saw Svelte. Some tensing when Holden was getting his...
Oh, you know what I mean?
Like,
No, that was acting to do with the pains and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to struggle.
Put it this way, he wouldn't have to tense anywhere near as much as one of us.
Look at my muscles bunching.
Yeah, you... No, but I did like the little easy access thing that they put in for the drugs, because it's a bit like a Venflon or whatever it's called these days. What do they call it? They call it something else now, don't they?
You mean the drip things?
Yeah. They've got different names at different times, because it probably company, you know, the company that provides them or whatever. But they used to be called Venflons, and I think they call them something else now, but it was a C or something. Can't remember what they call them at the moment, but yeah, it's basically a tap straight into your veins, and so they put that thing in their upper arm. But I like that it shoots in like a little bullet sort of shape, and then there's a triangular spring.
That's really nice.
It's like the pad. It's like the pad that holds it in, sort of sort of nano stuff that shoots, like shoots under the skin or whatever.
That you like, you put the drugs in every now and then, and it sort of holds them and disperses them gradually or something like
but
that.
Yeah, it's probably a lot more to it. Yeah, it's nanotechnology.
I interpret them slightly different. I interpreted them more like how the implant contraceptive thing works, where it's like, but space version.
Yeah.
As in, like, you know, you put the chip in there or the thing in there, and then it just over, and then just periodically over the time that you've got it.
I've never had it, so.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, but I assume it needs refilling every now and then.
Maybe it needs
refilling, I assumed it was like a port, so they could plug in instead of having to be.
I mean,
needled every time.
We're guessing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a MacGuffin.
Space medicine.
Yeah.
Space medicine. yeah. Right. Okay.
Is that everything on the?
I think we've covered the Rocinante stuff pretty comprehensively there.
Yeah.
Can we go to, because it's a short scene, but it's important. Can we go to, we see Jean-Pierre Mao's house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Well, this was one of the things I was going to get to next, which is Jean-Pierre Mao. Yeah.
So two important things happened there for me. First of all, like, we know Jean-Pierre Mao is in control of, or whatever, the proton molecule. Now we know explicitly that he's working with Aaron Wright. We see he and Aaron Wright colluding. We'd had hints, more than hints, but we knew that, but now we've seen it happen. And I also thought it was interesting when he was talking about his daughter, about Jules. And it's very much another character sort of establishing bit. He's talking about Jules, and he's clearly proud of her, but he's proud, he doesn't say, oh, she was a kind person, she was compassionate. It's not her qualities he's interested in.
No.
He talked about her accomplishment. She taught herself this, which implies characteristics, but like he's looking at it from what did she accomplish, which fits with, you know.
Yeah, what boxes can he tick on his proud father, proud father with no emotion, billionaire checklist.
Yeah,
and also I find it weird that he would bring him down for that.
He's proud of her for being involved with the experiment as well.
Well, he's using that to say to Aaron Wright, look, I sacrificed my daughter to this project. Like, whatever you're going through, it's nowhere near what I'm going through. So get on with your fucking job and
get your shit together and keep doing what I say, not what the government's supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Mm.
So he's going there as a bit of, well, grandstanding then. Because it kind of rang a bit sinister to me that it's like that he would do that, but now that you phrase it like now that you put it like that, it makes a lot more sense.
Mm.
Because he's like, sacrifice diplomacy, sacrifice my career, and that kind of thing. It's like, I'm gonna sacrifice my fucking daughter, mate.
Aaron
Wright was trying to be, he was trying to push himself up in power, and it's not going to happen against somebody like Jean-Pierre Mao.
No,
I think Aaron Wright overestimates himself and has got himself in deeper than he thought. You know.
Yeah, and also he looks like a bad guy, which is probably going to work against him at some point, doesn't it?
You mean Aaron Wright? Yeah,
Aaron Wright. Yeah,
I was just referring to Jean-Pierre Mao, or not, because I think Jean-Pierre Mao looks a wee bit sinister as well. But that might just be, of course, Chinese, so we know you're not going to be liking them.
Well, they look like two people colluding. Well, they are two people colluding. So but they're like, ha, 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 ha. And then we'll take over the universe.
Yeah.
So.
But you can see that Jean-Pierre Mao is like absolutely obsessed with the protomolecule, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, was it discovered by his corporation, or does his corporation just have it right now? Or do we find that out later? Or
I think they discovered it.
Yeah. I think it was Phoebe Research Station was a. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not. No, wait a minute. Phoebe Research Station was a Martian research station, I think.
No. Earth controlled.
I thought it was Martian.
I thought it was Martian.
No. That's why they're pissed. Has that happened yet?
No, that's happened. It's Martian. I disagree, sir.
Well, can someone Google it?
I'm 100% on this one. I could be wrong, but I'm
100%. I could be wrong.
Yeah, so was Avicerella when she was talking about the guy in the academy.
That's why they
let's get to that in a bit, but that's definitely a bluff.
Mars blow it up?
Mars blew it up, yeah. No.
But the thing is, it's like the missiles were firing. Everyone's like, "Oh shit!" It's going towards the ship that was going to head towards Fred Johnson, I assume. And then they went past it into Phoebe Station.
Okay,
Phoebe Station's secret laboratory located on Phoebe. It was used for research on the protomolecule by Mars and the Protogen Corporation.
Okay, I'm wrong. But it's Protogen working there, who are on Earth. Mm. Or a UN.
UN, court. Because okay. Jean-Pierre Mao is kind of Luna type. This is why I was banging on about Luna, not forgetting Luna, because I'm sure they're strongly, although he's got places, all, you know, he's got places everywhere.
With corporations, I mean, like now, yeah, I mean, they've essentially got space globalization. So despite Mars owning it, like, it, you know, they're just a corporation, you know, and they built a factory on. I mean, I was very wrong. I'm not.
I'm assuming that the Protogen Corporation, like they're not restricted by UN, right? Like in the same way the company can work across multiple nations, Protogen can work across Mars, Earth.
Apple can build a factory in China.
Doesn't yeah, exactly.
China Corporation.
So,
I was going to say something and I thought, oh, a spoiler. And I said, no, it's in this episode, thank fuck. But yeah, we discover in this episode that the place goes quiet. The Doniger are sent there and they find people frozen into the, you know, the environment, the tunnels and stuff where the base are. People have been frozen into it and they've been incinerated or something.
Can you remind me why Mars fired upon Phoebe Station to completely destroy it?
They don't actually tell you that in this episode, but we do know.
Is it to cover up what the proto-molecule research stuff?
Mars don't know about that.
No, but were they doing
I was poker facing that, but you know.
were they doing it under the orders of Jules Pierre Mao?
I think Hamish is right. Yeah, let's let that play out.
Okay, cool. All right. Yeah, my assumption, my guesswork is that they were getting rid of evidence or but then maybe it could be someone in Mars that is like, you know what, that's where the protomolecule is, let's just blow it up. But probably not. I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking. Yeah, my immediate instinct goes to destroy evidence. You know, do PM out, pull some strings. That's milking a cow. he blows up the Mars of the Phoebe Station because one of the things with the protomolecule that Naomi said was like, you know, what if we need that for a vaccine? You know, like, which is different to when they blew up the Anubis.
I think that's interesting. I think this is smart writing again because she's the only belter. She's the only one who grew up in the belt on the ship, right? It's first world, third world. And she realizes it's a weapon, but she understands that if it's a weapon, it's most likely to be used against belters. So she's like, no, we need... I mean, it's Iran wanting nuclear weapons. It's like, if nuclear weapons are going to get used in the world, it's on somewhere like Iran. So Iran wants its own nuclear weapons to prevent... And Naomi gets that, and the Earthers and Marsers, they don't see that. And I think that's smart writing, I think.
Yeah. And also, remember, she does that part before Eros.
Yeah. Mm. So
the fact that she found more of it after Eros, afterwards... Because remember, they don't open the safe until much later because all the other stuff's happening. Because they had all the stuff happened on Eros and they were down there. So when they get back to the ship, then they get round to opening the safe, discover some more protomolecule. And then as Drew pointed out, she mentions, like, wait a minute, maybe there's a way to make a vaccine from this stuff.
I think the vaccine bit, I don't think it's a complete lie, but I think that's her selling it to the Inyas. I think it's more like belters need this fucking weapon if they've got it.
Yeah, and again, I think it's to do with the difference between it being wild, like it was on the Anubis, and being contained like it is in the storage. Yeah.
And with the Anubis, it was a bit more impulsive and emotional on the basis of Kant and all the rest of that, right?
Yeah, I would say so as well.
Whereas this, you know, context is fleshed out a little bit more. They know a little bit more about it. They look through the Dresden files, you know.
They've discovered a lot more detail. Yeah.
So, and also, I mean, are they basically doing the same thing that? No, maybe not. That Julie Mao was doing, where it's like she parked, you know, parked it in a discreet place, and then heads back, and then sort of. You know,
no, I think that's well. They're sort of doing the same thing, but it's different reasons and different motivations. I think.
Yeah, I don't think Naomi's trying to preserve the proto molecule at that point. She's just trying to fucking.
Well, it's just keeping your ace in the pocket, right? Like,
I mean,
you know,
I think we better poker face some of this as well. I don't want to get too deeply into it.
To me, the logic is, you know, there's. If you can stick it on an asteroid that no one will know where it is, and by all accounts no one will ever find it, it's like there's only stuff to be lost by destroying it, whereas it might be useful at some point down the line for any number.
Yeah, as long as nobody else can get to it.
As long as nobody else can get to it.
So she also, you know, she trusts the people on the ship, which is interesting because at this point, as you say, Miller is now part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she and, because again, they're
her and Miller have bonded pretty quickly, actually, I think.
I think they're both belters. They're both, I think that's why they bond. Not only that, their personalities obviously have to mesh, but I think they understand each other.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, do we want to stick with the UN side of stuff before we get onto the Mars things then? And just finish that up? Although it kind of intertwines, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's hard to separate. Should we go for Bobby then? Start there.
Well, should you want to do Avicerella and? Oh no, we've already covered that. When they
Avicerella we're kind of it's there's a big intermission.
A fascination attempt, first of all.
Yeah, the very first thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although Avicerella has her own opinion about it and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah,
she doesn't seem particularly fazed, and people even remark on that.
I think her family is used to, her dad was assassinated. She's used to
being the bad.
She's a Trump in that regard.
And also, I'm reading this wrong, but I think Ehrenreich would have been quite happy if it had succeeded. And he does go, I'm so sorry that you were the public face of.
I don't think we ever get specifics on this, but we hear that it was the Black Sky faction of the OPA.
Oh no, that's resolved later.
Oh, is resolved to. Okay, I won't say anything.
Yeah, there, don't. Yeah, leave that because it's important. It's actually important. Yeah, if you think it through, you'll get there. Think it through, you'll get to the place where it's.
Because I mean, it makes more sense to me that Ehrenreich is the one that did it, even though I don't.
Oh no, I wasn't suggesting that. I was suggesting he didn't give a crap if it happened and she succeeded, because she's.
Oh right, okay.
Because he's trying to manipulate her at the moment, and he's.
Well, I'm in the same position as Chris at this point, so because I don't remember what happened. So my speculation was, Ehrenreich / Jules Pierre Mao, Jules Pierre Mao, ordered the hit, paid the Black Sky to.
Well, I mean, Ehrenreich is suggesting that it was the OPA because of her standing up against Fred publicly. And hang on, look, bear with me 2 seconds. I just want to make sure I don't go too far with this.
Just run it through,
this episode, I'm going to leave that there. Actually, yeah.
I mean, if it was the OPA, there would be some kind of. Build up, or do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, it blows up. Oh, must be the RPA. we would have seen some sort of foreshadowing for it, you know? Like, it just
it was the big dramatic start off of the series, I think.
I don't know. There's something about it didn't read as I wasn't like, oh no, they tried to. It was just like, oh yeah, they tried.
This
to
has happened.
Her,
but, yeah, I don't think it's the first time, and you know what have you? Given
he's not fazed. She's not fazed.
She's
by
not
it,
fazed about it. Basically, yeah,
that,
yeah,
yeah. That leads the
If you go with Avicerella's reaction, you're kind of like you get. The
I mean, she's rattled by it, which is why. I mean, I think the reason she goes and hires Spy is because She's then questioning, like, are my bodyguards trustworthy? Are my UN-supplied bodyguards trustworthy? I need my own dude who I can trust.
Mm-hmm. He's a new character, I'm guessing, so he's going to be quite a big part of this particular plot line.
Yeah, he's a character.
He's a character. He is a person.
And his name is Spy.
I'm just trying to find his name to see if I can get the bloody thing, because otherwise...
It's one of those I'll know it when you say it ones.
Because they do refer to him, you know, by name. He's not just like, oh, you.
I think Chris has realised our not remembering names is more...
Yeah, don't take it too much as...
There's so many fucking side characters in this show. more than they're going to die kind of thing.
Yeah. It might be... Yeah, I kind of figure as much.
I don't know whether to mention this now. Yeah, okay, I will. It's probably why when Bobby comes in, it's a bit confusing as well. Mm. Avasarala doesn't exist in the first book.
No, she doesn't.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of this is like... They basically took... I mean, none of the series exactly mirrors the book that it's on, but it's like the big arc is always that, but the, you know, the details aren't always necessarily that. Mm. Because the same people that wrote the show were helping to write the TV show. So they wrote the series, the books were still writing, you know, they were writing the TV show. Yeah, so Avasarala doesn't appear till later, so they actually had to rejig it a bit to get it in. I'm not sure how... Yeah, I don't want to give you... I know you like making your little theories and stuff, so I don't want to give you false ones. And yeah, but just that's more of an aside than anything else.
Cool. All right, should we go to Mars?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't find his name, so go on.
And we didn't bury the lead, because the lead is Bobby.
Always Bobby.
Bobby. My first note just says, Bobby! !!
Oh, Peanut! Shutting the door hard doesn't make it open.
Oh, space dog.
Space dog.
What are you doing, space dog?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I suspect I'm expected to have this opinion, but she has not enamored me in the first episode.
No, that's understandable, yeah.
Watching it again, I can see, yeah, I can see that. I can see
it takes a while. I'll say this. I won't go to. There's what, and I don't think this is for everybody. I think this is quite specific to me. There's one particular scene with Bobby that I think is my favorite scene in the show. It's not particularly dramatic, or it's just for me very emotional, and it's about bravery, like actual bravery, and that's a Bobby scene, and that we'll get to that later. But I adore Bobby.
Bobby. She is great. You might not take to her the same way we did, but you know.
I mean, she's a very beautiful woman, but it's not that helps. But that's not what it's about with Bobby.
They've all got Draper written on the front of. Have they got all got Draper?
Bobby Draper is her name.
She's got like three names. They got Bobby Draper, so she's Roberta Draper, Bobby, but she's also a gunnery sergeant, so she's also Gunny, as that's her nickname. So she's got several names.
Okay.
All right. Is this the name and the subtitles thing?
Also, I noticed on the I think it's this episode on the little tag things that the Martian military have got. They've got English on the top, I think, and Chinese on the bottom. So there's definitely a strong Chinese.
Yeah. On that slight side note, you know how we talk about the news, the official TV thing sometimes. If you ever notice the detail on that, Chris might want to bring up a news screen that's in his, if he wants to.
Oh, I've got a different screen I'm bringing up. But
there's three little bars on the left-hand side.
I screenshotted that, yeah.
Yeah. That's always there, but it tells you, it highlights which bar the transmission's coming from when it's live, and it's got a time delay, and that switches when it's coming from different places. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that, but it's obviously all one company.
Mm.
Picture in chat if you want to use that. It shows the time delay to each part of the,
Hang on.
Right. I mean, you can put it on your one.
On my one what?
The...
Oh, right. I forgot I could do it as well.
Yeah, you can do it too, yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool.
So you'll see that if there's a report coming from the bell, it tells you where you are, who's sending the message, and what the delay is. So it tells you where it's coming from, where it's, you know where you are, and then you know what the delay is between them. So it's quite interesting. I
found this one quite interesting. Is that in her helmet she could do an augmented reality?
Yep.
It's picking
plus
up
100 years.
Yeah, which I don't like. Is that just fantasy mode? She just switches it on and goes, this is what it'll look like.
Well, that gives you an insight into what her goal and dream and...
Well, that doesn't come out very well.
But you see, you get the idea. It's Earth, Mars, belt.
So it's Earth is pre-recorded. Mars is 8 minutes. The belt is 16 minutes. So that's the speed of light to those.
The parts, yeah. Mm-hmm. Although the belt's very wide, so that's a bit of a bit of an average, I would say. Because they talk about later in the episode, they're talking about a 20-minute delay.
Yeah.
But then that's at Phoebe, which is around Saturn.
Yeah.
So that's like the outer edge of the belt area.
Yeah, but the belt also is a belt, right? Like. Does it depend on where you are?
Not in the sense that it'll hold your trousers up.
But like, I mean, it's not a singular place. It's a place that is.
Yeah, that's what we've been saying. This is why we're talking about the OPA and stuff. We see you can't really call it one thing because there's colonies on different moons and Mars and Jupiter, Jupiter and Saturn. There's colonies on asteroids. There's stations out there like Tycho. Which presumably can move around, you know. Well, it does. We know it does. You know, there's those kind of things going on. So I mean, you could look at the like a planetarium bit of planetarium software and see where they're meant to be at that time if you wanted.
Is there some open source planetarium software?
Yeah, there's at least two.
Oh, nice.
K-Stars and Planet something.
And the nice night sky one that you can point at the night sky. Yeah, what star is that? It's Stellaris. What's it called?
Well, K-Stars does that as well.
No, I'm thinking the one you can get it on your phone as well. Not.
There's
Sandy. Then you can just point it and go. What's that star?
You have to give it a lot. Sky Map is one that I've got installed from. F-Droid. But anyway, let's not get too much of a sidetrack because Chris has a hard time thing. He's got a hard stop tonight. Plus, I've now got to add it together.
Stellarium.
That's the other one I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah. So we see a little bit about Martian sort of preconceptions of Earth here as well.
Yes. There's a lot of that.
They look at us as. I don't know. I want to say like welfare queens or like gluttonous.
Yeah. Welfare queens is bang on. Yeah. Lazy. We don't work. We don't care about anything. We just have government handouts.
Free drugs. Yeah.
Free drugs. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a pretty good deal. I'm not going to lie. You know.
I don't know. I think purpose is essential for mental well-being. And it's implied that, you know, for the majority on Earth, that you don't have a sense of purpose.
Mm. Well, interesting. Yeah, but like, you know.
I mean, it's the propaganda angle, you know.
Like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying no to handouts. It doesn't stop my purpose.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I would not live without the handouts from the government.
So, you know, and free drugs, well, you know, who doesn't like free drugs? but like, I mean, we hear people talk about Earth, you know, we referred to as like colonizers, you know, we take mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. I feel like the Mars dialogue, there was a lot of like that exposition.
Yeah.
Kind of like dialogue, exposition heavy dialogue. In the way that felt very
realistic, though. But go on.
In a way that did feel very much like it was the first episode of series and they're set in the scene. Like, it wasn't bad, but it was like...
I mean, the previously on If you did, you get a previously on.
Yeah, I got previously.
Yeah, the previous thing is
it. You get a lot that's just people do it, like you know, Bobby arm wrestling her mech suit thing.
Yeah,
to show that actually it shows what she takes pride in herself and her looking longingly at Mars. We get a mix of the expeditiony dialogue and just his character.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit like you go on ahead. I'm gonna go here and muse about my. My goals and dreams.
And but I did like the
wasn't as it's, bad as some shows.
No, it's the silly line, but I love it when she goes, "I don't use sex as a weapon. I use weapons
as weapons." Yeah.
Very laconic.
And the fact that one of her squad, like she's got a squad of five, including herself, and one of them's an Earther technically. And there's a bit of within the squad friction and stuff already. You know, it's kind of interesting. Yeah. There's a few interesting details that are
Says, I chose I chose Mars. Mars chose me. You know, what did you do? So you just fell out of your mother's gravity well or whatever.
The two guys in that squad are the kind of children of the squad as well.
Yeah.
And the women are the strong ones.
Yeah. Mm.
Which is probably pretty fucking accurate.
I forgot what I was going to say about the... No, I've lost it.
Sorry.
Was this last conflict with Earth, is that something that they keep at the forefront of their mind? To remind themselves of the sanctity of peace, right?
Well, it depends who you are. I mean, obviously that guy, what's his name? I forgot his name. The high hegemon of the ship, anyway, the captain of the ship.
Yeah.
He's older, obviously. And you know, he's got, well, it's like we said about him seeming slightly disappointed in Bobby at the bit at the end and stuff. He's obviously got a very different view from real experience, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the Vesta blockade.
But they're both understandable viewpoints. They're both sympathetic viewpoints. And you also get the sense that both of them, really, they understand the other's point of view. They disagree strategically, really, on what should. And one does come from, maturity, and kind of prioritizing safety, and Bobby's prioritizing, let's get let's not let Earth hold us back. Let's
she's almost of the opinion that she explicitly says she thinks that the war's needed to clear something to give them a she feels like she's got that military and propagandized jingoistic thing going on, that she feels like something has to give, that there isn't a way otherwise for her. I think at this point she thinks it's got to come.
Well,
to
she's not wrong in the sense that having to have this military in case Earth does something is a drain. It's a drain on their resources, and it's slowing down the.
Well, that's
the
what she said. Is of that big event.
That is just factually correct. Yeah. If they can win a war against Earth. Then,
it frees up
then
the resources.
It kind of reminds me, I think we talked about this previously, where often in times of conflict, it's the politicians that are quicker to go to war than the generals.
Yeah.
The generals.
Yeah, well, that's again with the ship's captain giving you that point of viewpoint. Yeah,
it's like the voice of experience.
A bit like Fred.
Yeah. The idea of not being quick to, because you can't undo a lot of the damage that's done by military weapons, right?
It's human suffering, like that. The older ones who've seen war, they understand that it is fucking misery.
Yeah,
and same with the Earth Admiral, the black fellow
the lead of the Navy.
Nice little bit with him and Avasarala, where she's like, I remember him when he was a little tyke at the academy, and meet there. He's like, he never went to the fucking academy.
Yeah, but he doesn't call her out in front of everybody because he understands what she's doing.
He looks at her like, oh, there's something going on here.
Yeah. So this is her way of manipulating the situation in another direction without letting Erin Wright know that she's manipulating. But then, as you say, the Admiral Philo, is it, or something his name is?
I can't remember his name. I like him. I like him as a character.
Yeah, he seems good. Oh, I see the thing that you were talking about now. I can't do it. Yeah, I'm gonna. Oh, I don't know how to do this in a way that makes it not messed up. okay, so this was from. Right. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Maybe this will do it.
Oh, Souther. Where did I get Philo from? Admiral Souther. Souther, yeah.
Right. This is probably going to be just not quite as bad as yours, but maybe.
See the difference there?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a different. Oh, no. Is it the same part? Oh, no, it's the same part, right? The delays are the same. It's the same thing. Pre-recorded. All right. I thought it was a different bit you were showing.
Oh, no. Just
not. I thought it was one where the Mars was the thing. Or what.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've lost track as to where we've gone here.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. No. I do it to myself as well.
I mean, how much more do we know about the Martians at this point?
Well, we get that terraforming Mars is their main goal, and it seems to be a pretty universal goal amongst Martians is to get the place self-sustained and terraformed and stuff. Now, there are problems with that, which I don't know if they ever go into in the show. I don't think they do, but
we've talked about that before.
Yeah. Like radiation and stuff like that. There's a few other things.
We can accept that.
I think it's sort of hand waved. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that seems to be like a if you want to call it a national goal, because they actually do talk about nations when they're talking about the United Nations. They call themselves a nation, don't they? At one point.
Yeah.
I think it might be Erin Wright that said it, or the Secretary General. So they talk about their entirety as a nation, which is interesting. Mm. Anyway. But yeah, you've got. I've done the same thing. What are we talking about? We're talking about the Mars. Oh, yeah, what do we know about Mars? So we know that as a nation, they've kind of got one goal, one vision. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm getting a Queen song here. and they've also... We also know that the younger military people are... At least in they all seem to be of a similar mind, and it seems to be that somebody's somewhere in their society, this jingoism has become strong. I think that's clear because, like, not just her squad, but the entirety of the MC.
I think that's a necessary thing to cultivate in a cold war.
I'm not saying it's not. But we see that it's there. We see that it's part. So again, it's a unifying thing for Mars.
And I think it's interesting we see that less on the Earth side. Like, Mars isn't really a problem for Earth, except that they've got a military. Whereas for Mars, because the reasons that Bobby said, Earth is a huge problem for Mars. So I think the Martians are propagandized against Earth far more than the Earthers are propagandized against Mars.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there, yeah. So then, so you've got that. So what else we find out about them? We find out that that they've got their own little... Like, they've got that guy in the squad who's sort of a Martian and sort of not. You know, they've got that sort of...
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a... Yeah, I mean, this is... I think Mars is probably the most right-wing-ish of the whole thing.
I, as the Martian representative, would dispute that categorization. We're more militant.
Yeah, okay.
We want to get rid of the bourgeoisie Earth. So that we can have a dictatorship of the proletariat across the system.
I mean, they're quite jingoistic.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. But again, we are seeing the military, mostly.
Yes.
But it's about, economics. Military. It's about economic systems. We don't hate Earth as, you know, we recognise their humanity, but they're trapped under a bourgeois dictatorship. We want to liberate Earth.
You don't know all about Earth, yeah. You've only got your own. That's the other thing, is they've only got one story about Earth, as it were.
Mm.
The Martians. Yeah. They've only got one view of Earth, and I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything, but we're going to see later, and we've had glimpses of it, that there's more to Earth than just, you know, the big cities. And because we've seen, like, the farm, Holden's family's farm and stuff. So we know there's more going on Earth still. It's still more complicated than, you know, it's not, this isn't Gene Roddenberry's Earth of the future by any stretch, you know. Yeah. Salt problems haven't been solved. Kind of, it's got a taste of it, but not...
Well, it's the more cynical view of how that would go, or it's a, yeah.
Well, the underclass has more or less become the bill.
The difference with TNG is they've not solved scarcity. There is still scarcity, and that's the problem.
Yeah, and that's what's causing them to fight over the resources of the bill.
Yeah.
What else do we know? Oh God, I wish I'd taken notes.
Does Earth provide Mars with any kind of food?
We don't really know for sure.
It's possible you could infer that there's trade between all three segments.
I would suspect that Mars is self-sufficient for the essentials of living, but for luxury goods, I would imagine they still get from the Earth and then.
But they do seem to be quite rich when you look at the state of their military ships.
Oh yeah.
Look at how well supplied the galley and the.
I think that's more about
Atlanteas, you know,
necessarily. Not necessarily about having more, but about, you know, again, propaganda, but a better economics.
Who gets it as well?
Yeah.
Could be that on Mars itself that maybe people aren't getting as much stuff as the military are getting.
I think Mars is implied to be, and, you know, we'll see it later, like it leans socialistic.
Yeah. Like I say, it is a one, they seem more unified than anywhere else.
Yeah.
The other one, Mars. If you talk about factions in the solar system, Mars is pretty solid as a single thing. Like, they seem to be militarily and politically.
I do think political. You know, in terms of political economy, we've got. I mentioned this ages ago, but Earth is liberal capitalism, liberal democracy, whatever. Mars is a socialist republic, I would say, and the belt is anarchistic.
Mm.
Also, we get a bit of clarity on the Ceres rulership with the cheese story.
So it is
an Earth guy that's in charge, nominally in charge of Ceres. Yeah. But, I mean, we all know it's Anderson Dawes that's in charge of Ceres. But
yeah. Was the cheese thing, did he say it was going to like a luxury place near the belt or on the belt?
No, it was going to a luxury... it was going to a colony or something. I can't remember the exact phrasing, but it's somewhere on. I think it was one of the moons of Saturn.
Yeah, with
might have been Ganymede. He might even have mentioned Ganymede specifically.
Maybe
we definitely know there's bases there anyway.
And that's just for. Is that where posh people go for holidays or something?
No, there's permanent colonies and stuff. You'll see more about different colonies as the show goes on.
I think it's implied from what we saw there, like it's the posher end of the belt.
Just like they're talking about, Eros used to be good, and then because better place, you know, that was like a foothold into the belt, and then Ceres, you know, is a foothold into the belt. But once better things are made, as you say, for the posher people to visit or whatever, those places become just everyday working class type places anyway, or they get, you know, neglected like Eros did.
Or just become for material reasons, you know, like you say, it was an early outpost and then somewhere else became more important and it's just a backwater.
So it becomes less, so they're not as important because they're not the frontier anymore. They're just a sort of way station. And even then they became less than that, but Ceres became the important way station.
Yeah. Have we covered the episode?
Can I go back to when Miller's talking to Naomi and just to support what I was saying about her view of the weapon versus the Earth's view of the weapon? She says, I wrote this line down, she's talking to Miller and she says about what happens on Eros. She says, Holden was shocked. I was shocked it didn't happen a long time ago. And I think that kind of sums it up.
Oh, excuse me.
And another thing I noticed, but it's a small thing, when they were at the beginning scene with Bobby, the rockets that come out of her, because I thought it was kind of a bit wild that she was like running right into the middle of the battle. That doesn't seem like any kind of military strategy I've ever heard of.
Yeah, but she's got this super armor and they're tracking everything. She's the
drone almost.
Gunnery sergeant.
Yeah, well, she's the, what's the word? There's a word for it. But she's like the hare, if you like. You know, she's running through while the dogs are chasing.
So I think somebody behind her is on a screen painting the targets.
Exactly. Yeah. She's going there so that to entice them to shoot at her, basically. Yeah. And then that reveals all their positions. They feed the information back to her suit. Her suit then blows the shit out of them all.
Yeah, it's a bit like the typhoon in the Deus Ex games.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Like, so basically Adam Jensen can do a pose similar to what Bobby was doing, but he has like bombs that come out of all
his just shoot out in all directions, don't they?
Yeah, his is more of a scattering approach, whereas Bobby's was hyper.
Well, and you also get it's also in it's not an unusual thing. It's Robert Heinlein's suits do it, I believe, in Starship Troopers.
I think we also see it in one of the Iron Mans as well.
Yep, and you also see it in what's it called? The Mandalorian. Mandalorian's got, he's got the thing that's on his wrist that does it.
So lots of that. But yeah, I thought that, yeah, I mean, I'm looking for, I'm interested to see some of that more techie military stuff in some action scenes. I'm hoping we'll get later on.
Oh, you'll get that.
I'm thinking about, I think I may have made a mistake. I think Bobby Draper's squad is four people. Yeah, it's four people, not five.
There's
two guys, another woman.
Who's the rich woman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
how many air purifiers does she own on Mars or something like that?
All of them.
Yeah, so is that the Julie Mao of this particular of Mars?
Actually, that's quite a good thing. Yeah, given some of the stuff that's coming up, you're probably quite good. Yeah, that's a pretty good thing. Nothing spoilery about me saying that, but yeah, there's more. That's explored a little bit more. Well, off family with property and all that.
Is she one of those people that's like, she's from an influential family, so she does pretty well in the military as a result of that.
She's only corporal.
Well, we're given that impression. I mean, when they're arguing, they say that kind of thing. Yeah. I mean,
we say only corporal, but it depends how old she is, right? If she's corporal at 23, pretty fucking good going, right?
Well, that's still an NCO. If you're young, and you're really rich, you end up going to officer school.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, because this is a bit of a rabbit hole, but like the Royal Marines are very different from the US Marines.
Yeah,
they're completely different things. Like the Royal Marines are basically special forces, special ops, commandos. The US Marines are an expeditionary force, so they're just like a smaller version of the US Army. Like there's hundreds of thousands of US Marines, and I think there's a few thousand Royal Marines, and I'm not entirely clear on the MMC, which type of Marines they are, but
she claims they're worth 20 Earthers each.
yes, but I mean the Marines. Regardless of that, the Marines are like even in the American Army, the Marines are much better trained, much better equipped. They're an elite force compared to the
grammar school army.
Exactly. Yes.
But I like the action scenes on that Bobby scene, to be honest. It did seem it seemed just cool in a very like superficial kind of way.
It was just a cool action schlock.
Sutton is the name of the lieutenant who's in charge of the Scirocco.
Is he the bald guy?
Yeah,
I liked him. He was my favourite Martian character, actually.
He's nice. I like him a lot, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's the sort of dad, isn't he, of the whole thing.
I think important to that dynamic is that clearly, like, but when he's disappointed in Bobby and walks off and Bobby, like, that makes Bobby sad. Like, she gets it.
Yeah, she
like,
gets that he was disappointed, yeah.
She's a teenager being back chatty to a parent and then going, I went too far, I'm being a dick, kind of thing.
Yeah. But I like the wisdom and the experience. I always like that. Yeah. I always like wise characters because, I don't know, they got like because there's a reason behind the wisdom, right? Like Avicerella, she's wise, but in a very different way.
Fred Johnson.
Yeah, again, he's got that kind of, you know, that wisdom.
Well, yeah, they've all been through stuff. They've all learned
Doors in a different way. He uses it differently, but
they've all learned from real life experiences, basically.
Which is
that's how people learn, I suppose, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah, but it's like, I mean, wisdom is pretty diverse,
A little bit of an aside here. Carry on. I've just noticed the episode title is Safe.
Yes.
And Firefly has an episode called Safe.
I mean, I assumed it was called Safe because of the safe.
Yeah, is it a double meaning?
Multiple meanings, because you've also got they're on the ship. Nobody's after them at this point for the first time in ages.
Mm.
This is the first time after Eros. Once they get away from Eros, it's the first time in a long, long time that they're, you know, literally.
And that
lasts to the end of the show.
Yeah, goes through the whole
never time. Any more peril.
And the belters on the, not the belters. Well, the Siri, the Eros. Survivors in the ship's hold, is it? They're safe.
Yeah. I love that scene as well, where the dude is agitated. He's worried for himself, so he's argumentative. He's a bit aggro, and then the check comes back and he's okay. And he's like, "All right, thanks." Yeah.
A different episode. It's a different episode in terms of. I just wondered if it was the same episode of Firefly that had the big meal sequence in it. I just wonder if that would be a cool thing. If it's not, it's a different one. I thought it was. It's a different one. Mm-hmm. If you're interested, for anybody watching that doesn't know about Firefly, it's the episode where they go to a planet and the Tams get, Reverend Simon get kidnapped, basically.
Which number is that?
Episode five.
I need to rewatch Firefly. It's been a while. It's been like 10 years since I last saw it.
I enjoyed Firefly back in the day. I'm not sure it bears up now.
It's not worth the 10 hours of rewatch.
I'd say give it a rewatch. I will.
It's probably. It's
Joss Whedon.
Once you've had The Expanse, there's not many sci-fi shows can really measure up.
Joss Whedon stuff is all like, I'm a cool character, listen to me quip.
He's got Nathan Fillion and...
He does that well, but I'm a bit tired of that. Because Firefly and that kind of style of TV... very much influenced like the Marvel stuff, and we're just awash in that kind of style of show thing now, and I'm tired of it.
It's better than the Marvel stuff, obviously, but I don't know if Firefly would have lasted more than a series. It didn't get a chance, and maybe that's what saved it. Maybe if Firefly,
I wouldn't argue against that maybe it wouldn't have been as well thought of as if it didn't sort of burn brightly and then burn out, sort of thing, you know.
It was a glimpse of something a little bit different.
Also, Joss Whedon did turn out to be a
bastard,
hassler of women.
Yeah. I mean, Dollhouse is. Did you watch Dollhouse?
Mm,
so
no,
it's interesting watching that in that context. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Christ. Yeah. No, he's.
Let's not get into all that though. That's,
Yeah, but I mean, I'm more keen to see. Like, I mean, this did feel like an opener, you know, like a beginning of a series episode. I'm kind of keen to see. Like,
I think in a way, it's showing a different angle to the show as well. They're carrying over a lot of stuff, like the tensions and everything, but they're showing the military side of it now, not just weird little incidents.
It's also doing what the first few episodes of the first episode of the first season, you know, you're getting a few more new characters.
Introducing more stuff,
Follow. But Chris, given that your main point of like intrigue and interest in the first show was kind of, I'm not saying the only, but your focus seemed to be on like, you know, the ships and Julie Mao and what ship was going to what ship and where and when and why and all that kind of stuff. That's largely resolved now. What's your sort of point of intrigue at this point?
Oh, definitely the proto-molecule. That's the whole. Is that really? That's the thing that the show is currently revolving around. Most interested in the proto molecule and also the Protogen Corporation. Now we know that they're the baddies, or are they? But probably. And a little bit about the sort of the tensions between Mars and Earth and how they're possibly being stoked by Protogen.
And you see, it didn't get resolved. The tensions didn't get resolved by finding out what it was because something else happened, because the Eros happened and caused another problem. And then we still have the hanging question about the stealth ships, and they're blaming Fred Johnson openly anyway, because we get the idea. I mean, without anything, no spoilers or explicit information, but we get the feeling that Avicerala is not convinced.
Well, there's been an adjustment there, which I think is kind of important, because they were clearly trying to frame Mars at the start.
Mm.
So either that plan went wrong, which, you know, because of Holden and his crew, it kind of did, or like for some reason they've shifted tack and now they're trying to blame the, you know, they're specifically, they want an antagonism. It doesn't really matter with whom.
Mm. Well, they're definitely Fred Johnson did everything he could. Hashtag justice for Fred Johnson.
He gave the information, remember you saying what was he going to do with the information? He gave it to everybody.
He gave it to everybody, which is I would like to think I'd have done the same thing. That seemed like the sensible thing to do. And they're still twisting it and manipulating it against him. And to the point where I don't think Fred Johnson could have done anything. I think that, like, you know, like, it's
He's not got anything to present to the contrary yet.
I am interested to see what Fred Johnson actually is probably one of my favourite power players in this, actually.
Oh, thank
That's
you.
That's interesting.
I start wearing a Tycho badge now.
I mean, he's got that nice balance between ideology and pragmatism, you know, like this.
And you get the sense that he's not, because I love Anderson Dawes, as we know.
Yeah, like, he's excellent.
He's not as willing to use people. He's not as ruthless.
I don't think he's as much of a zealot either.
No, he's Dawes, more.
Dawes, although Dawes is manipulative and pragmatic, and he'll take advantage of things as they come. He does it more quickly. I think he has more. Yeah. He is a zealot. Dawes is
They're both working, I would say. They would probably agree. They're working to the same thing, but
how they do it is different.
Dawes is just more ruthless
I think Fred Johnson's sort of more, he cares more about his people, is the most obvious difference.
Yeah. Say the distinction is probably Dawes is more emotionally driven and Fred Johnson's more, a bit more rash. He controls his emotions.
He certainly thinks about things for more time, I think.
Yeah,
I think Anderson Dawes would have done something very quickly with that information, no matter what. Might not have made the right decision, but he would have done whatever he felt was right there and then.
I think
Dawes, like, is a bit more. Johnson's a bit more sort of sneaky and careful about it.
Johnson, I feel, is playing a bit more chess. You know, like he's thinking a few steps ahead and sort of considers the consequences a little bit more. I know I just said what you said, but with extra words.
No.
You said it smart, like, not like Demi-me. Yeah.
it's Anderson Dawes, right? Does that have anything, like, and the Butcher of Anderson Station? Is that just coincidence
as far as I'm aware?
Yeah. I never thought of that.
Yeah. No,
Maybe Dawes uses it. I can't know. Is that Dawes real name? Maybe he uses it as a...
I mean, it's
an inflammatory name, but Anderson. Yeah, but then it's not a very common first name, is it?
I don't know, but then it's space, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's space in the future, and I'm sure there are people today with the name Anderson.
Wasn't there an explorer Anderson?
Oh.
Like an Antarctic explorer.
I don't know. We might already know this and not have picked up on it. Maybe Chris has. He's named after the company his parents worked for.
Oh.
So Anderson Station is where he's from.
That's cool.
Wow. Oh, maybe there's a.
Yeah, I'm just going to look. I'm reading the recap of the story about his sister. Yeah, there's a bit of a gap in the story, but it could be that. Yeah. Because they were. I mean, he talks about being out in space, not just being on Ceres. I mean, that's the story with his sister. He buried her somewhere where they found a beautiful place or whatever. Mm. Yeah, so maybe they escaped Anderson Station beforehand.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, it would.
But yeah, he is explicitly named after Anderson. Which is a weird thing. That's like me saying, like, I'm, you know, calling my first child McDonald's, you know, or, you know.
Which would be very confusing.
Microsoft of Scottish or term. HP or something.
Yeah.
Lego. Cool. What's a toy company? But yeah, that's I didn't. Yeah, I mean, I kind of obviously I'd thought about it, but I just kind of dismissed it. You know, Chris is the one that picks these things apart more.
He does. Yeah.
I literally that just came to me a moment ago. Like,
I thought you were thinking about it for a while, but yeah, no, he's named Anderson deliberately because of where they're from, which is the Anderson Station and Anderson Corporation.
We're done though.
I think we're done. Yeah.
So cool. All right. Well,
I've done all my notes. Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can see what Bobby is coming across.
Oh yeah,
much more harshly to start with. Show, I think
that's what the show always does. It shows you they're never perfect characters. Yeah,
and, but I mean, you know, the one soft bit of it for if you wanted to Bobby one more time is why not? The one soft bit of Bobby is that, you know, the softening part is the bit where she stops and looks at the previs for the future.
All of the aggression drains out her face and she's just, I'm in love with this idea.
Yeah, so she's got a reason. You know. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you all very much. This has been Season 2, Episode 1, Safe. Mm-hmm. And we will be back at some point with Episode 2. Thank you.